Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Yeah! Mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts. UFC 270 preview show starts now!
It does indeed. The UFC returns to pay-per-view tomorrow night, and although the card has, as a whole, has been ravaged quite a bit, you cannot deny that the two title fights are pretty damn interesting. As we welcome you to the live UFC 270 preview show here on MMAfighting.com, I am Mike Hack. We got the whole crew here. We got Jose Youngs joining us live from Anaheim, California. We got my bald brother in arms as well, Mr. Sean Al-Shadi. He is here from Arizona. How are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderful, Mike.
And E. Casey Lydon on the ones and twos with that fantastic introduction.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm hyped. All right. It's martial arts, baby.
You should be. Gentlemen, no time to waste. Let us get into this thing. And Jose, I am so glad that you are here in particular. Not that I'm not happy that everybody else is here, but I'm very glad that you're here because I feel like we need you right now. I feel like we need your poetic waxing because this main event for the UFC heavyweight title, for the baddest man on the planet title between Francis Ngannou and Ciryl Gane, the storylines and the drama have outweighed the actual fight, Jose. The teammate stuff, the former coach and the former fighter stuff, the leaked sparring footage and the sparring chatter, Francis's contract, all that has become more than the fight itself. And while I love a good storyline, Jose, you know this, I love it more and we need to seek it out and kind of add sizzle to the steak. This fight has it, but doesn't need it. The fight between Ngannou and Gane on an island, Jose, no outside factors, just two guys getting in there and battling out for the heavyweight championship of the world. This is what it should be all about as a fight enthusiast, is it not? This fight by itself. Can we talk about just the fight by itself?
100%. I mean, I feel like this is what's been missing for the heavyweight division for a long time, especially considering, like, if you look at the last few heavyweight title fights, it's been rematches or, like, we had that, obviously, Derek Lewis, Daniel Cormier headlines, Madison Square Garden, but that was kind of thrown together last minute just because they needed a main event. And I know when Stipe and Francis fought last March, that was everyone knew. You didn't have to come. There was no argument against that those were the two best heavyweights in the world. And Ciryl Gane hadn't arrived on the scene yet into the top five even or title contention at the moment. But to me, this just feels different because, A, it's a fresh matchup between Ciryl Gane and Francis Ngannou. Because let's not forget, Stipe Miocic beat Francis Ngannou the first time. So he's out of the equation right now. Ciryl Gane might just be the best heavyweight ever. And that's weird to say, just considering he's what 2 years ago he was 3-0, he was 3-0. And the only other fighter I can think of that has had such a rapid rise to the top in the heavyweight division is Francis Ngannou. They're two very different in terms of stylistic matchups. And I think styles make fights. So either someone's going to go to sleep or someone's just going to get pieced up for 25 minutes. And I don't care if this was a flyweight to a heavyweight. I don't care. These two stylistic styles right now make for an awesome fight, and I personally don't care about any of the drama. I would watch these two fight in an empty arena, and I would be happy. So just adding like 20,000 people in Anaheim just makes it that much more special.
This is why we started with you, Jose. You set the scene here, and we turn it on over to Sean. Sean, what's your storyline to watch for this one? Doesn't have to be any of the dramatic stuff, but even just from a fight perspective, what stands out to you with this heavyweight title fight?
I mean, what stands out? There's a lot that stands out, right? But for me, it's two big things. One is what Jose just mentioned, and I want to start there because I do feel like it's getting lost in this week where we're talking about sparring footage and all of it, and the contract status and all of this. The fight is being lost, and the fight is just an utterly sensational fight. Jose's absolutely right. We went through such a malaise with this heavyweight division for such a long time. I love Stipe Miocic as much as the next guy. I love Daniel Cormier as much as the next guy. But for 3 years, we basically didn't have a heavyweight division because we were doing this once a year title fight situation with just these two guys. Everybody else was just sort of wasting time and just sort of, you know, twiddling their fingers waiting for this whole situation to be resolved. And now we're finally here. We have these two gentlemen who I think you throw them at any era of the heavyweight division and they would be the champion in that era of this heavyweight division. This might be, Jose said it, you know, it's ridiculous to say that Ciryl Gane might be the best heavyweight ever, especially this early, but he certainly looks like a guy who could be the best heavyweight ever. He has all of those measurables, and Francis Ngannou is the most dangerous human being we've ever seen inside the octagon. And just the punching power, the death touch. I have rewatched somewhere on YouTube, someone put an ultra, ultra slow motion version of his fight against Yarzin and Rozenstruik. And it's like a minute long, and it's just the slow version of it. You can see how utterly ridiculous it is, how he just basically dinks him. He bonks him on the head, and Yarzin and Rozenstruik's lights just turn out. Like, someone with this level of punching power is just... It's utterly ridiculous, right? It's a phenom. We've never really seen something like that before. The fight itself is absolutely wonderful. And you think back to where we were last March when Francis did what he did against Stipe Miocic. It felt like we would never see him be the underdog again. He felt like he was a guaranteed lock to be a favorite in every fight he competed in until whenever he lost again. And the fact that it's his next fight. We're already one deep in, and he is the underdog going into this fight against Ciryl Gane. It's a crazy matchup, and I love that fact about it. But for me, too, the other storyline that obviously you can't not mention, because it is just swirling around this, and it is something where how many times have we seen it before where a fighter sort of takes on the UFC and ultimately the UFC wins? There's not a lot of situations you can point to where this has worked out well for someone to busy themselves with so much distractions around a big fight and they end up coming out ahead. It's very real question. Is this the last time we ever see Francis Ngannou in the UFC again? I mean, we know the story, right? He's coming into this. This is one fight left on his contract. Everything that we're hearing from Francis's side is that they're confident that come the end of 2022, that contract is over one way or another. That they believe they have a 5-year deal, and that deal is done regardless of whether this man is holding the belt or not. But if he loses, and loses in any possible way, whether it's a DQ or just he actually loses a controversial decision or he just actually loses the fight, Francis Ngannou could be a free agent by you know, next month. Like, this could be Francis's last fight in the UFC. And if he wins, there's a chance, who knows, that maybe he just sits out the rest of the year waiting for this contract to, at least in his team's eyes, expire. And can you just imagine that? A champion trying to leave with the belt. The UFC pressure, the fact that it's his former coach, it's the guy who built this guy from the ground up, who told him, who found him on the streets of Paris and told him, hey, man, you should come into this gym. I think you'd do well here. It's just utterly fascinating. All aspects of this fight are sensational, and I know we have gotten lost a little bit in that with some of these minor storylines that have popped up in the lead up to it, but this is really just a marquee matchup in every possible way you could phrase it.
Agreed. Overall, from a promotional perspective, the promotion of this fight has not been tremendous, if we're being honest. I feel like, and I agree with Ariel, because I know he talked about this on Wednesday, that the media, we have probably done the lion's share of the promotion for this fight, mostly because of the contract stuff that you just talked about, Sean, because it's a much more interesting story than the leaked sparring footage or any of that other stuff. But Casey, Sean mentioned that we didn't think we'd see a world where Francis Ngannou would be an underdog. Now, he opened as the favorite here, but the line has flipped in Ciryl Gane's favor, and maybe it's just people thinking that all of this drama, all of the storylines, maybe Francis is a little bit distracted. But right now, Ciryl Gane's around, depending where you look, minus 145 to 155 favorite. Does this surprise you? Like, are you surprised that we are looking at a heavyweight title fight involving Francis Ngannou, and he is the underdog here?
Yeah, it's very surprising. I get it. I think this goes back to a little bit about what Shaheen said about the or Ariel said about, I feel like the media has been kind of, I don't want to say pushing the narrative of, you know, the sparring footage and just the contract situation, but that's this, that's the main talk. Like, there's, when we talk about this fight, I feel like 10% of the conversation is actually going, is actually about, holy crap, these are the two best heavyweights in the world potentially fighting at their prime. Like, each of these guys could possibly be like the greatest heavyweights of all time, and they're facing each other in Anaheim tomorrow night. And that's like so little, that's such a little part of the conversation. It's all about, you know, is he, you know, what's in his head right now? Is he mad about the sparring footage? Is like, does he want to do this because he's mad at Fernando Lopez? You know, it's like, it's just drama, right? We're not even talking about the actual fist fight. Why we're actually here? Why we're paying $75? We're not even, that's such so little part of the conversation. But it's just prize fighting. It's just a weird world we live in now. And, yeah, just I'm shocked, but I get it too. That's just how it is.
Jose, the fighters, it's just a tremendous fight. I love how the coaches are involved here. Not all of it. But I have so much respect for not just the fighters, but for both coaches individually. I'm really intrigued about the actual coaching matchup between Eric Nixick and Fernand Lopez. I don't care about any of the drama and the leaked sparring footage and how one felt about it and how the other felt about it. I don't care. The strategies that these guys are going to bring to the table, what they are seeing in putting these game plans together. And I really enjoyed how both coaches were at the media day answering questions about the fight and about what makes the opponent stick out. I don't need this every single time, but in this case, I'm totally okay with hearing from Eric Nixick, hearing from Fernand Lopez. Your thoughts on the intrigue of the coaching aspect of this fight and what the game plans could possibly be and how they're being constructed?
Yeah, I mean, regardless of the coaches or not, like, these guys have sparred with each other, France and Cyril. So drama aside, I am curious to see how a fight like this plays out, because you always hear like, oh, you've heard the stories of fighters being just monsters in the gym. And then like who is it? Like, Mike Pyle was the big one, monster in the gym. But as soon as he made the walk to the octagon, couldn't always get it done. So I'm curious how their sparring does translate to the fight. But Eric Nixick is way too level-headed of a human being to be involved in the sport of mixed martial arts. Like, everyone's trying to stir the pot of like talking about the leaked footage and stuff, and he's like, hey, that's not my problem. Like, maybe that's just their gym. I'm worried about my gym. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Why is that your problem? It shouldn't be our problem. And we're the ones worried about it. And then Fernand Lopez at media day seems a little remorseful at the falling out with Francis. And these are two masters of their craft. But it's also like you hear like the Jacksons of the world and the ATTs and the AKAs. And Jim Couture kind of disappeared for a bit in like the scene. And then Fernand Lopez was obviously doing great things in France, but it was kind of out of sight, out of mind for American fans. So I'm excited that these two coaches, these masterful coaches, are getting the platform that they deserve. Like, they clearly have created two of, like, in Fernand's case, he created two of the best heavyweights ever. And Eric Nixick made it known at media day, like, all credits to MMA Factory in Paris for giving Francis the building blocks that he just kind of polished. So I saw both coaches shake hands in the lobby like the other day. Like, they bumped into each other, and I remember pointing to someone, and I was like, oh, this could be some drama right here. And they were just like, oh, good luck on Saturday. And he was like, good luck to you too. And like, that was it. Two nice guys, two masters of their craft. And I wish there wasn't the drama, because they don't need it. Like, neither of them seemed like, obviously Fran is doing all the interviews and stuff, but this doesn't need it. I'm very excited to see how both corners. I wish, because back Casey and Sean, you know, and Mike, you know, when you're backstage, you don't really get to hear the corner cam because it's always muted. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually disappointed I won't get to hear both coaches in the corners between rounds for the main event.
Well said, Sean. I know we have to wait and see how this all plays out. It's sort of the rule of thumb. We don't like to jump too far ahead, but John Jones has been a big talking point in the build to this fight. Ciryl Gane was asked about it. He said, I got to get through Francis, but I would love to fight John Jones next. Francis Ngannou at the press conference is like, nah, I'm over it. I ain't fighting him. I don't believe him for a second, but that's where this is at right now. How much of a factor is John Jones in this fight and him getting the winner? Like, are you confident that we are going to see the winner of this fight John Jones next?
Am I confident? No, absolutely not. Because we just went through this. Mike, heck, we just went through this last year, right? What was the conversation around Ngannou versus Stipe 2? It was, hey, the winner of this fight is going to fight John Jones. He's been waiting all this time. He's been building up to this heavyweight, to the spot to be this heavyweight. And then it never happened. So I can absolutely understand where Francis is coming from when he said at that press conference yesterday, man, I'm over that fight. I'm beyond this. And I can also understand Ciryl Gane just saying, hey, man, this is exciting for me, the idea of fighting John Jones, because he is going through it for the first time, just like Francis did last year. So, I mean, John Jones is sort of the big question mark hanging out just in the scope of this division in the distance for really like 2 years at this point. It's so hard to say with any level of certainty that he's going to come to terms with the UFC, that they're going to be able to make this work, and that the UFC isn't just going to do the same thing that they tend to do these days, which is, hey, you know, we're good, just moving on without you. We're going to get the same money regardless from this pay-per-view, whether you're involved on it or not. So I'm not at all confident that John Jones is going to play a part in any of this. And also, you have a man sitting out here, and I've seen one person mention his name this entire week. Stipe Miocic is still sitting out there. He still exists as a human being in this division. He was not long ago being called the greatest heavyweight who ever fought in the UFC. He hasn't fought since this whole situation. Who knows how Stipe plays into this as well. Heavyweight's a big, giant mess right now, but the fact that we could at least get this kind of fight out of that mess, I consider that a win still.
All right. What does it say
about how incredibly powerful the brand, the three letters UFC are? The fact that we pretty much none of us think that the John Jones fight's going to happen, and a lot of us consider John Jones the greatest fighter of all time. We're not even talking about Stipe, who last year we considered the greatest heavyweight of all time. And we consider it's a very serious possibility that Francis, even as heavyweight champ, might leave the UFC. And like, that's not even a concern of the UFC. They're like, whatever. They're like, we make so much money, we can throw anyone out there and you will pay $75. And they will. I'm scared and amazed. Yeah. Without John Jones, without Stipe, with only one Francis fight, you know, they're still just making dollar over dollar. It's incredible. And they may lose all these giant stars, but they're like, whatever, UFC sells. I just think that's, I mean, no matter who wins tomorrow night, UFC wins.
The fact that we're even having this conversation, right? Like, it is an all-time botch job how the UFC has handled Francis Ngannou, because you have here a guy served to you on a silver platter who, if you designed in a lab, a heavyweight champion who could become a superstar, like a superstar on a level that we really haven't seen in MMA outside of like a Brock Lesnar, who was already kind of that guy before he got here. It's Francis Ngannou. Like, he has every recipe, every, you know, ingredient in that recipe that you could possibly dream of. And we're talking about contracts. We're talking about sparring footage. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of hype for this. Like, there is no promotion that has been gone, that has come into this fight. Really, it feels like they don't really seem to care to promote this fight. We haven't even seen Francis fight since March. And that's not on him. He's been ready to fight. The whole thing is just a giant botch job. But the thing is, they don't care, right?
Okay, because they're still making money. They're still making
most successful year ever. We've heard it 1,000 times at this point. So it's utterly bizarre. But again, that's just where we are in MMA. And let's just enjoy this one for what it is.
Francis is the easiest fighter to promote probably in UFC history. He doesn't even have to say a word. You just show clips of the knockouts over and over again. That's it. That's all you have to do to get this guy over.
So
it's pretty wild.
Also, show clips. He has the story. He has an incredible story of overcoming all these unbelievable odds and highlights and everything.
Looks the part,
he's a marketer's dream. He's a Marvel superhero the way he looks out here. And it's just, what can you do?
It's wild. There's so many intangibles here, Casey, but let's go to picks. There's so much to talk about. I do want to get to the people for at least a little bit at the end of this. Who you got, man? Francis Ngannou, the champion, the underdog, which is still shocking to even say, or Ciryl Gane, who is just What a story this would be coming into the UFC at 3-0 and eight fights later. He's a world undisputed champion.
I'm going the champ, Francis Ngannou. Oh, but the whatever. They're both champs. Sorry. I have that stupid interim belt. But I'm going Francis Ngannou. I think he can still do it. I think people are overvaluing the Ciryl Gane victory over Derek Lewis. I think Derek Lewis pretty much had one of his worst fights of his career. And Ciryl Gane showed up and just did his thing. But I think this Francis Ngannou in this new Extreme Couture version of him is just simply very, very, very good. And I think he's going to be ready. I think these outside distractions are going to make actually Francis even a more vicious, scary person in there. But I do expect kind of a boring first round. But third round, knockout, Francis Ngannou.
Jose, who you got?
I picked Ciryl Gane. The second Ciryl Gane beat Derek Lewis to beat Francis Ngannou, and I think John Jones is eventually going to fight Ciryl Gane. So I'm going to stick with that because I'm not trying to be wishy-washy, but this is a 50-50 fight to me solely because Francis Ngannou can kill you by touching you in the head, and Ciryl Gane could just pick you apart for 25 minutes until you just fall apart. So 50-50 fight to me, but I'm not trying to be wishy-washy flip-flop, so I'm just going to stick with Ciryl Gane. I've said it enough times, but I said the way I think this fight goes is the way I thought the Dawkins-Derek Lewis fight was going to play out, because if you remember, I picked Dawkins to kind of just be faster, be a better athlete, and just be a better mixed martial artist. And then Derek Lewis touched him, and he just died. So that could happen again Saturday night with Ciryl Gane and Francis Ngannou, but I'm sticking with my original choice back in August, Ciryl Gane.
Oh, real quick, what Jose said, I think a factor, what I do think Ciryl Gane has an advantage, is the big cage. If this was a small apex cage, I do think Francis has a much easier path to victory. But with the big cage and Ciryl Gane being so good with just moving around his footwork, I think this will be an advantage for him. Not enough an advantage, but I do. Everything that Jose said, I think, is true too.
John, what you think?
It's just so hard for me at this point with what we've seen from him to believe that you can spend 25 minutes in a ring with Francis Ngannou and not just get touched once. And that's all it takes at this point. We've seen it over and over, time and time again. But also, I know people will point to the back-to-back losses a few years ago. This is just not the same guy that we saw against Stipe Miocic this first time. It's definitely not the same guy we saw against Derek Lewis. The way that Ngannou has transformed his game, or at least feels as if he's transformed his game, because we haven't seen it a lot. We saw some of the takedown defense in that Miocic rematch. We saw some of the improved pacing and just sort of the patience that he's approaching these fights with now. It just feels like this is Francis Ngannou 2.0, and I still believe that this man, by the time he retires, will be the greatest heavyweight that we have ever seen in this sport. Just his combination of gifts and work ethic and just all of it. I think that's so hard to overcome when you put yourself in a cage for 25 minutes with this guy, and all it takes is one single mistake. Ciryl Gane has to be perfect on Saturday. He has to be perfect from pillar to post the entire way through, and that's just a really really hard ask. And also too, I know that again, people talk about the distractions, people talk about how there's just so much around Francis Ngannou right now and how much he's basically putting it all on himself, right? I think Eric Nixick called it his Rod Tilwell moment on the MMA Hour this week. What's that movie, Jerry Maguire moment, where he's betting on himself. To me, it feels like Francis is the kind of guy that thrives in that environment, that he wants to prove so hard right now to the UFC, to the world, to Dana White, to everybody, that there is a reason I am asking for what I'm asking for. He feels so disrespected by all of this, and that he deserves what he's asking for. And I just feel like this is going to come out, and it's going to be a career night for Francis Ngannou. It's going to be one of those statement nights where he just shuts everybody up, and then we really are left wondering what's going to happen with this man who might be a superstar by the end of Saturday night.
I'm with pretty much all of you that it's a 50-50 fight. This could go either way on the surface, right? And very little would shock me here. But in the end, like, I'm picking Francis, and I'll explain a little more in depth in a moment. But I'm looking at a 50-50 fight like I have to spend money on it. Like, I have to bet on somebody, or the money disintegrates from my life forever. And if you're giving me Francis at dog money, I'm not ignoring that. It's so enticing. So absolutely, I'm doing that. But I went back like over the last couple hours and I watched a couple of Ciryl Gane's last fights. I watched the last three Francis Ngannou fights because they weren't very long. It only took me like 12 minutes to watch all of them, including the walkouts, because it's so ridiculous. People look at Francis Ngannou, and I've seen it all over social media. Like, he's just this guy that's going to walk towards you and just move his hands and hope he connects with something, and then he puts you to sleep. Not true at all. This guy is a very technical striker. He feints a lot. His feints are nasty. And by the way, he is throwing high kicks. He's getting all sorts of tricky out there. His footwork is really good and very underrated. On the same token, Ciryl Gane, very good footwork himself. He moves around like a middleweight. The Derek Lewis fight, Derek Lewis is obviously a dangerous guy, and maybe if that fight didn't happen in Houston, things would have gone differently. I don't know. That's just Derek had a lot of pressure. You could see it the entire week. Ciryl has not seen the danger factor yet. He has not been touched once, whether you're in the small cage, the big cage, whatever. When Francis touches you, I'm very, very interested to see how he responds to it, because Ciryl fights with his hands down an awful lot. That chin's going to be right there to get touched. If he could show the Calvin Kattar kind of durability and somehow eat it and move forward and have Francis thinking like, oh my God, like I can't stop this guy, it's going to be a really interesting fight. But Francis just has that power, and he's so good at setting things up, way better than people are giving him credit for. People think that Ciryl Gane is clearly the more technical striker. Yeah, he might move around and a little more lighter on his feet, but go back and watch Francis Ngannou fight Stipe Miocic. Go watch the feints, the footwork, some of the things he was doing, him being able to mix in the high kicks, the wrestling game's getting a little bit better. I think Francis is getting slept on in a big way here by a lot of people. I think he puts him to sleep in the first two rounds. I think Francis touches him. I think he gets him and he puts him away. I'm not fully confident, but after just going back and watching these last couple of fights, I have some serious questions about Ciryl Gane and his ability to take a shot, especially a shot with Francis Ngannou. If he gets hit and doesn't get dropped, he's going to be on his back foot. I'm very, very intrigued to see how his style changes after he gets punched one time real hard by Francis, even if he doesn't go to sleep. So give me Francis, a dog money, and in a much more technical fight than people might be giving it credit for. I think Francis deserves a little more respect from a footwork technique perspective.
I think part of that, too, is out of sight, out of mind, right? Especially in MMA. We've seen this so often. Ciryl's the guy who fought last. If Francis Ngannou had defended his title in September and just knocked out somebody in, you know, a round two performance where he defends a couple takedowns like he did against Stipe, is that line any different? Do you feel like that line, he's the underdog coming into this? It's just we haven't seen him for so long, and Ciryl's the hot new thing. People saw him last. I feel like that's playing a part here.
Yeah, recency bias is very real in this sport. So speaking of recency bias, go ahead, Casey.
After the conclusion of the fight, do you think the conversation, whoever wins, do you think the conversation will be that guy is the greatest heavyweight we've ever seen?
No.
Or is it, you don't think so?
I mean, well, that's the conversation after every UFC pay-per-view of seemingly. Yeah. But like,
but you know what I'm trying to say? Like, are we kind of past Stipe already? Is it? I know Stipe had a good run,
I think it's just how you judge greatness. Like, talent and greatness are two different things. Like, Ciryl and France, like Ciryl might be the most talented heavyweight ever since like Cain Velasquez, but I still think accolades matter. So Stipe is still the greatest at the moment.
I do think it will be fair on the reach. The conversation is, can this person be the greatest ever? That is a very fair conversation, especially between these two. But is them declaring them as the greatest, Roganism. That's just ridiculous.
Obviously, Ciryl would need a couple more wins. But like, imagine if Ciryl just rolls through, does the same thing he did to Lewis to Ngannou. That means he undefeated, wins the belt, and as far as I remember, hasn't got touched. I'm assuming he rolls through Francis. Like, hasn't got touched once. It's just a lot of what ifs. I love this fight. I just wish we didn't have the stupid drama. It's just like this fight's so much fun to talk about, you know. But we've talked very little about the actual fight, you know. In the end, you know, it's about the drama, and it's kind of annoying. You know,
I mean, let me throw one more what if at you then. Let me be a little more annoying. Can you imagine if let me paint this scenario for you. Can you imagine if Francis Ngannou comes out there on Saturday night and a Peter Yan Aljamain Sterling situation plays out where he throws an illegal shot and he loses the belt by disqualification,
cuts some sort of heel promo, just some wild thing like that, and then leaves the UFC on that note, having, you know, maybe let's say he was winning that fight up to that point and he was about to knock Cyril Gane out, and he throws that illegal shot, loses the belt. Free agent, Francis Ngannou, free agent. He can do whatever he wants. He's top of the world still. People still consider him the best in the world, and he's all of a sudden up for grabs for anybody who wants him. If he wants to go box, if he wants to go to Bellator, PFL, wherever. Can you just imagine the chaos? I'm here for chaos. That's all I'm saying. That's a possibility that could happen. It's not going
to
happen.
I like this crazy man. I like this crazy man above me.
I have to be honest. The first 45 seconds of that, Sean, I was ready to just get really upset with you for the negative juju. But the more that story was told, the more I think you are just an evil genius. And that would be an amazing thing that happened. I mean, what a moment. He just goes out and be, or, and I've seen conspiracy theorists out there saying like Francis should just like knock down Cyril Gane, like have him on the ropes, and then just like tap the mat and be like, I'm out of here. See you later. I could have beat this dude and I'm leaving. Peace out. What a gangster move that would be. So a lot of intriguing storylines. We'll see what happens.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. Your body is your own. That's why Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Today, lawmakers who oppose abortion are challenging Planned Parenthood. Affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. Planned Parenthood believes that health care is a basic human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common-sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies. They also work tirelessly to oppose the onslaught of new policies aimed at interfering with personal decisions best left to patients and their doctors. They won't give up and they won't back down. You can join Planned Parenthood in the fight to help make sure that the next generation can decide their own futures. The organization needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. to learn more and support their cause.
Speaking of recency bias, co-main event. Brandon Moreno gets another sort of hometown feel of a fight. Defends his flyweight title for the first time against his old buddy, Davison Figueiredo. This will be the third consecutive time these guys have fought. Figgy Smalls looked Figgy Small. Shredded on the scale. Looked healthy. But will that be enough to get a lopsided finish loss back? Jose, like I said, three times over, these guys are getting after it, getting into the octagon. They've taken each other's best shots. They're very familiar with each other. Figgy's made some camp changes, staying stateside. Seems like it's been a pretty damn good call, at least physically in the eye test. What stands out to you about this third fight?
Well, remember a couple of years ago, everyone thought the flyweight division was dead, and now they're the first like weight class to have like a trilogy like this in rapid succession. And it's a tale of two fights, obviously. The first fight was absolutely bananas. I picked that event as my 2020 event of the year, and that fight played a big factor in it, where Davis Figueiredo made history as like the shortest time between title defenses, because he defended at like, what, I can't remember the exact dates, but it was like November, and then it was like December or something crazy like that. And at the time, it was like Davis Figueiredo, fighter of the year, making history and this and that. And then he fights to a draw, and then he goes out there and gets tapped by Brandon Moreno in one of the worst weight cuts I have ever seen for a defending champion. Like, he was crying after making weight because he didn't know if he was going to do it. And yes, I know him and his team are saying that he had started a gym. He had some stuff going on in Brazil. It was a bad weight cut and he got sick. So he lost because of all of the outside noise affecting the fight. And now he's corrected that by removing himself from that environment, going to train with Fight Ready with Henry Cejudo, Brandon Moreno's old teammate and sparring partner. So yeah, we're talking about the drama in the main event. There's just as much drama between those teams in the co-main event. But I picked Brandon Moreno the second time with Sean Alshadi outside the Gila River Arena in Glendale. And I think I'm one of the few people in the media that day that picked Brandon Moreno to win. And I based it solely on the weight cut. And I thought Davis Figueiredo was a dude that was just going to melt fools at flyweight when he touched them. And then after watching that first fight for 25 minutes inside the Apex, Brandon Moreno took a lot of Davis Figueiredo's best strikes, and then Brandon Moreno corrected those mistakes he made and then submitted Davis Figueiredo. So I'm still going to – I know you didn't ask for my pick, but I'm going to give it to you early. I'm still sticking with Brandon Moreno. Every Mexican in the world is here in Anaheim, apparently, because everywhere you go, you're seeing El Trey fly, and you're hearing Moreno chants. You're hearing a lot of bad words in Spanish being yelled at press conferences, which if you've never been to a Mexican soccer game, you'd probably be like, oh, what are they saying? And it's all bad. It's all bad, and I'm not going to say it because this stream would get demonetized if I say what they were saying. So I just think this fight, again, rules. Two best flyweights on planet Earth. I'm glad it's a trilogy fight. Styles make fights, and this is checks all the boxes for, as I've said a million times, high-level martial arts competition. I personally don't even care that there's a belt on the line. I just want to see these guys fight a third time. And it's weird that the co-main event is being slept on because it rules so much.
Yeah, it's a really interesting matchup, Sean. Lots of good storylines here. Some cringy ones, but for the most part, if we're talking about the actual fight itself, we got Davis and Figueiredo looking to get a win over Brandon Moreno. Third time they fought, hasn't beaten him yet. Brandon Moreno, first title defense, he goes from the hunter to the hunted, and it seems like he's handling being the champion in good stride. He said that was something that he was worried about. It was something that got into his mind right away, told his manager immediately, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to get too big of a head. I don't want to take my foot off the gas. And just to have that wherewithal, I think is pretty impressive. And I think it's a pretty important thing heading into this fight. So your thoughts on the matchup, these guys running it back for a third straight time, Mr. Alshadi.
It was such a interesting sight at the press conference yesterday. The contrast in styles between these two men, just the personality wise, you had Brandon Moreno up there who was enjoying himself so much. You could just feel himself living in this moment, thriving in it, just having the best time ever. And then on the other side, you had Davis and Figueiredo like on his phone half the time. It seemed like just trying to like, he was very angry. He was a very angry man, and Brandon Moreno seemed to revel in the fact that he was so mad. I just love the dynamic between these two guys. And like Jose said, the actual matchup itself is utterly sensational. I think the trilogy aspect of it is a little odd because obviously if Davis and Figueiredo comes out there and wins, like what are we going to just do a fourth fight in a row? Like how at that point it's 1-1-1, like where do we go with this? Like that's a really weird aspect to this to me, but I do feel like he is being slept on a bit, and obviously he's the underdog coming into this. The fight team out there at Fight Ready, Jose can attest to this because we're both Arizona boys, and that is an Arizona gym. They take a very scientific approach to a lot of stuff that they do, just in terms of weight cutting, body management, training, and a lot of things like that. They have a very scientific team over there, and we saw it actually today at the weigh-ins. Davis Figueiredo looked pretty okay at the weigh-ins. Like he's never going to look great at the weigh-ins, but he looked pretty okay and much, much better than he did in that second fight. And I think you would be hard-pressed to watch the weigh-ins of that second fight and say it didn't affect it in some capacity. I mean, he looked miserable when that fight was out here in Arizona back in June. So obviously, I think we are going to get a better version of Figueiredo. I like the team switch-up in general. We have seen it. I mean, people will, you know,
call them the Kings of Cringe and make fun of, you know, Captain Eric Albarracin and all of them over there at Fight Ready. But they are damn good at what they do, man. They really do improve fighters when they come out there. And we have seen them work magic with a lot of different guys in this game. And I think they could do the same with Deiveson Figueiredo. And I think he will come in here with, you know, a few new aspects to his game, maybe more patient. We saw him tell Guillerme Cruz, our good friend on this website this week, you know, he came in here and really with a focus of just being more of a professional fighter rather than a brawler, more of a patient man in the octagon rather than just hurrying to get the finish. I think we will see, you know, that level of strategy play itself out. But I think this might just be one of those situations where Brandon Moreno has this guy's number, right? Like, Brandon Moreno is tough as all nails, and he is just so underrated in terms of technical ability and how he handles himself in that octagon. I cannot wait. I love the dynamic between these two guys and the matchup itself. You could run him out there 10 times. I'm going to watch all 10 times. I feel like any of those fights would be exciting.
I feel like Eddie Cha is not getting enough credit either, because people talk about Cejudo and Albarracin and how cringy they can be. But at the same time, I will say this to play devil's advocate. Those two guys, Cejudo and Captain Eric, they care so much about their fighters. They really do care. And I feel like Eddie Cha brings a certain level of level-headedness to that team that is just flies under the radar. What he's done with Zombie, and I just feel like he meshes in pretty well. So, Casey, you are getting ready for your own fight. So I'm curious to get your take on this, because from a technical standpoint, these guys are pretty evenly matched. Figgy has that power. Moreno has the wrestling advantage, clearly. We've seen it and throughout the exchanges in both of these fights. Figueroa's takedown defense has not been great throughout his career. But if you're going to improve any aspect of your wrestling, going to Fight Ready and working with Henry Cejudo and Captain Eric Albarracin, those are pretty damn good guys to work with. I believe Figgy started there like the fall, September-ish, when this fight was put together. So it hasn't been too long. And the takedowns were clearly there in the second fight for Moreno, and they were pretty easy. Is 4 or 5 months enough time to close that gap, in your opinion? Because that was a very big gap in that second fight.
It's not big enough to close that gap skill-wise, but I'm assuming this is a Figgy had a really good weight cut. He looked great on the scale. He just didn't seem as sickly as he was in previous weigh-ins. So I think with the combination of those 4 to 5 months with the proper weight cut, I do think that really levels up Figueiredo. If you would have told me like 3 months ago, maybe I would like, oh, Moreno's going to win this rematch easy. But man, the more I think about it, the more I forgot Eddie Cha. Eddie Cha's a terrific coach. Figueiredo, his weight cut looks he looks great. And I think at Figueiredo at his kind of maximum potential, whatever weight it is, I do think he beats Moreno. But it's always that weight cut. Maybe is Figgy just too big for flyweight? Maybe they figured it out. Maybe, because remember Henry Cejudo? Remember the idea of Henry Cejudo fighting flyweight? We were like laughing at that forever. He was like dismissed. I think Henry Cejudo almost missed weight at bantamweight, you know. But obviously, I think he's really learned a lot from that weight cut, and that weight cut is going to be the big difference maker. And I think it's going to be more the weight cut that's going to really. Really even the playing field for Figueiredo tomorrow night. So and just being around Eddie Cha, remember also those bad weight cuts, he had to travel from Brazil. That's a lot of time in a plane. That's a lot of toxic, was it Nick Diaz, the toxic plane water? Toxic water. So that means, I know we kind of make fun of that, but that's a serious thing. And the fact that he's, you know, like this might be the best version of Figueiredo we've ever seen. And that's why this fight freaking rules. This does.
Yeah, I don't love the build with the Cejudo involvement. No, like, I'm glad he's part of the story. Yeah, I mean, he's been a great influence from a mentor perspective for a lot of his fighters. So I will give him credit for that. But engulfing him into the storyline, the whole traitor thing, not a giant fan of the whole thing, but I'm ready to see if the story will continue on into a fourth fight or if Moreno can just put the stamp on it and put this behind him for good. So Jose's going with Moreno. Sean and Stiller and New here.
It's funny you say that, man, because it feels like there's so many parallels right now between this main event and co-main event, where the fights themselves are just so utterly spectacular, right? Like, they are everything you could possibly want as an MMA fan, but just the promotion and the storylines that have sort of swirled around it for both are just so strange and so non-fight related, and it's just like it doesn't have anything to do with what the actual, you know, what's actually going to play out on Saturday. I've been back and forth on this one in terms of a pick for this whole lead up. I mean, this has been, again, I really do believe in those fight ready guys. They are brilliant minds over there with what they do, and again, the scientific approach that they take. We saw it even with Weili Zhang in her rematch against Rose Namajunas. She looked much improved in that fight. Obviously it didn't go her way, but she looked quite good in that fight as well. Jose's picking Moreno. I'm going to pick Davis and Figueiredo, man. I think this is, I'm up again. I'm up for chaos. I'm up for weirdness. And this series all of a sudden be 1-1-1. And the idea of a fourth fight just seems very chaotic and weird and very MMA to me. These guys are very evenly matched in my mind. If you get good weight cuts from both of them, again, I feel like that weight cut played a huge part in that second fight. I'm not sleeping on Brandon Moreno. That dude is a monster. He is an absolute beast. Again, he is tough as all nails, but I feel like Figueiredo's coming in this and he gets this one done.
You know, it's funny.
Casey.
You just talked about, were they going to run back a fourth time? But then you also said, man, these guys can fight 10 times. I'm going to show up front row every time.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, so I love it too. I totally get what you mean. I'm still going Moreno, and I think it's going to be closer to the first fight, hopefully, just for a pure entertainment standpoint. But, man, I just... This is one of those fights that they fight 20 times. I think Moreno wins 11 times. That's what I just think they're that evenly matched. I think they're both just exceptional fighters. And like I said, I'm assuming Figueiredo his weight cut is on point, and we're gonna see the best version of him. But it's freaking Brandon Moreno, and I think I believe everything Brandon Moreno said after the first fight. You know, he was kind of not. Not I want to say scared, but he respected Figueiredo's power too much. But now he fought 25 minutes with him, and in the second fight, he's like, I know what I'm getting. And, you know, we saw what happened in the second fight. But I think both guys have learned a lot from the first two matches, and I think we're going to see a fight of the year candidate. But I do think Moreno will pull it out, and and the trilogy will end with Moreno being and still.
This is such a good fight.
I love it.
And I think there's some things...
I reiterate what Sean said. Yeah, that equal annoyance I had at the first fight is like, why can't we just talk about how freaking awesome this fight is? It's just two fighters at their prime, and it'd be the same thing at flyweight, and yet it's just drama. But I don't know. Is the drama working? Is it selling anything? Because I feel like it's
I don't think so.
I know we see that since we're like almost like too close to it, you know, like as a casual, is the drama making people go, oh, I want to buy this? I don't know.
My real question is, if it does go to a fourth fight, what's that called? Is that like a quadrilogy? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. I'm going with that.
I have no actual idea.
Throw it in Brazil. We gave Moreno like two hometown fights. Put it on this May card. See if they could turn around. We'll put it in Brazil. I'm taking Jose credit. CC. No doubt about it.
My friend.
I think kind of like the main event. I think there's some things about the champion's game that are understated. I think clearly he's got a wrestling advantage, and maybe the gap will be a little bit slimmer here. Fight ready. Tremendous team. No doubt about it. Moreno's very good on his feet. His kickboxing is vastly underrated. And when he goes and lands that left kick to the body, that does not get talked about enough, because that sets up the wrestling and the grappling. And that is such an undervalued weapon that he has. And the biggest thing, and I know I think all three of you touched on this at some point, Moreno is probably the most durable guy in this division. You are going to have to hit him across the face with the Louisville slugger to get him out of there. And I don't even think that's going to be enough. And like I said during the weigh-in show, I didn't like what I saw from Figueiredo at the press conference. I didn't. I understand, again, this is part of the fight-ready strategy. Captain Eric's going to script out things to say. He's had the earpiece in, so he's probably telling him what to say too. I'm not a psychologist, but it appears that the focus has been more on trying to rattle Brandon Moreno than skill on skill. And that's kind of a problem for me. I got to say, I will say this from a betting perspective. I love the odds on Figueiredo. You're telling me I can get the scariest flyweight ever at plus 155 or plus 160. I'm starving, and that is a scrumptious line. And if I thought this is a 50-50 fight, I might lean that way. But I don't think it's a 50-50 fight. I think this fight's going to get extended. I think it's going to go 25 minutes. And for a fight that goes 25 minutes, I love Moreno on that spot. When you're a guy like Figueiredo and you're starching everybody clean, and then you hit a guy with your best shot and it does nothing to him, that has to do something psychologically to you. And sometimes in the sport, there's one guy that just kind of gets the better of you. And I have these vibes here with Moreno after that second fight. I think it's much more competitive than the second fight. I think we're going to look back on this fight as more competitive than the scorecards actually read. But I think it's going to be a clear yet decisive win for Brandon Moreno, like a 49-46, but a close 49-46. But if you throw money on Figgy Smalls, I don't blame you at all, especially at that price tag. But love the fight. Love both of these title fights. Very excited for it. I was also very excited for Ilia Topuria and Charles Jourdain. That fight is no longer happening. That one's off. Let me just say really quickly
before we move on. You can get right now an underdog parlay. Francis Ngannou, Figgy Smalls, both at underdog odds. $10. Guess how much $10 on that will get you. Both those outcomes, very likely, or not likely, but very possible, yeah. Right?
It's $160.
$10 on the combination of them will get you $45 now. Plus 455 for Francis and Figgy Smalls. That's crazy, man. That, can you imagine saying that last year? Just saying.
Yeah, it's out that's
there.
Wild.
It's out there.
And if you wanted to take a shot at that, jump all over that. That Figgy line is just crazy. If Figgy was the dog at like plus 110, that's about right. But 155, good grief. I definitely don't have an issue with that. So,
listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Yes, this fight card, not great. More of a boxing style looking card. apparently, this is the time people want to come to my house and start ringing the damn doorbell. Why is this happening?
Tell them that there's
show?
Important things going on right now, Mike.
We're talking UFC 270. Come on. Anyways, Jose, let me just go to the low key banger. What's the under the radar fighter or storyline you got? So I can mute my mic and start yelling.
I mean, the answer obviously was Ilia Topuria versus Charles Jourdain. Charles Jourdain has been like all over. Like I bumped in about 10 times in this hotel. He just seemed very excited to just compete. So feel bad for both men involved. But without that, just off the top of my head, I mean, the answer has to be Stamen versus Nurmagomedov. Saeed Nurmagomedov, because they seem to be the only one that have, like, A, bantamweight, we've all said, has been like one of the better divisions of the last like 5 years in all of MMA, not just the UFC. So these two guys are supremely talented, and I don't think their rankings or lack of rankings is reflected on their skill set. I just think that's how good this division is. And these seem to be the two guys that actually kind of have a plan of what they want to do after everyone else at Media Day was like, oh, we'll win and then see where we go from there. And Saeed's like, well, I'm going to win and then I'm going to fight Sean O'Malley or Chito Vera. And then Cody Stamen was like, well, I'm going to win and I'm going to just smush Sean O'Malley. And I was like, Well, at least there's a talking point right there. Like, both of these guys seem to be overlooking one another to fight Sean O'Malley or someone bigger. So I think that's the answer that everyone's going to pick for, like, the quote-unquote low-key banger. I mean, obviously, like, there's fun fights and fun fighters. Like, Trevin Giles on this card. Kay Hansen's on this card. There's a lot of fun fights like that. But a lot of debutants on this card, a lot of fighters making their UFC debut. I think I read it's like one of the most ever, and the other ones, like, I don't, you can't even really count because it's like nine, they take place in China. It was like one of those like UFC China cards, and then like the Mexico City card where they just filled it up with like tough Latin America fighters or Chinese fighters making their debut. So for a pay-per-view in Southern California to have some of the, with like the two massive fights at the top, to have one of the most, like the card with the most debutants on it, is just baffling to me. So I would have to say the easy answer is Nurmagomedov versus Cody Stamann.
That is a great fight. I spoke with Cody Stamann on We Got Next. That article is coming out tomorrow. I will disagree with the Stamann overlooking Nurmagomedov because he has some comparisons, some metaphors, if you will, that are kind of frightening to think about, but you could see that tomorrow. So, Shaw, what's your under-the-radar fight? What's the one that's got you excited that's not getting enough love with all this drama going on?
Yes, Cody Stamann, a big fan of testicular metaphors. Guy really went to the well with that a couple different times on your show, Mike. First of all, I need to know, who was at the door?
Yeah.
It's killing me.
I think it's my kid. I think it's my kid's friend. Who knocked for like 14 minutes and then rang the doorbell. So. Yeah, it wasn't,
Tell that kid to show some damn respect. This is the most important preview show in the world going on right now.
Unbelievable.
I mean, the Cody Stamann one is definitely a good pick. I mean, Jose mentioned sort of that fun fact about all these debutants on this card. That's certainly what you want for the first fight card you put on after this big price hike, where now all of a sudden $75 for this pay-per-view. It's just great times over there. But Cody Stamann is certainly a good pick in this regard. I mean, he's told you very upfront, Mike. I mean, he has a lot of self-awareness stemming from that interview, just the amount of pressure he's feeling coming into this fight. This is a guy who's been around this division, this bantamweight division, for a long time, and he's fought a lot of the best guys, and he's coming off two straight losses, and he really does feel like this is do or die, now or never for him. But that being said, I can't believe we just had a whole conversation about under the radar fights or low-key banger fights. It didn't even mention the fact that Michelle Pereira's on this card. Like, I don't even care who he's fighting. The fact that he's on this card at all, and this is a guy who could maybe do a backflip into, like, you know, trying to get mount or however kind of insane craziness he's gonna throw out there, like, that's the pick. Anytime that guy's fighting, he's the low-key banger. So Michelle Pereira, come on, show the man some love.
Yeah, at first I thought AK was gonna be on, and now it kind of feels like AK's on, because he would have said the exact same thing about Michelle Pereira. What sticks out to you, Casey?
Easy for me, Barcelos versus Victor Henry. I think Barcelos,
your boy, your guy,
yeah, my you boy, Victor Henry, man. You've been on the my fellow catch wrestler. Well, first of all, Barcelos, I think he is without a doubt the most underrated bantamweight in the bantamweight in the UFC. He is incredibly exciting. I just don't think he just doesn't have that personality or look that, you know, it kind of bumps him up the cards. But I think he is incredibly talented, incredibly violent. Victor Henry. Unfortunately, he fought in Japan a lot, and because of COVID, kind of just stalled his career. He was on his way to basically fighting for the bantamweight, the Ryzen 135 championship, but COVID kind of screwed that up, so he's been kind of in limbo. But good for us, now he's in the UFC, now we get to see him much more often, hopefully, and he's just a very exciting fighter. He has been UFC caliber for years, and he gets to show up. He gets to fight finally in the States and in front of a big audience tomorrow night, and I'm super excited. Josh Barnett protege, a high level catch wrestler, just super exciting, funny dude. Listens to good music. He has a very, very tough fight. Hey, that counts, man. He's got a good taste in music. That means something.
I like listening to good music, throwing it in as like part of his, like, that's like the early breakdown. UFC, when they would do like the fighter attributes and it was like no known weaknesses. I just want to see a bullet point with listens to good music.
Great taste in music. I love it, man. Like, I'm tired of all these guys walking into crap jams, man. He's going to come out with some good stuff. So that means something. Man, we've been talking drama and just things that don't matter. So we might as well throw in his good taste in music.
Hey, there were multiple NFT questions at that press conference. You want to talk about music? We could talk about music. It's just fair game as anything.
100%. Yeah, there's. I mean, you all pick good ones. I like the Michael Morales Trevin Giles fight. I like the guy with great potential taking on the grizzled vet. It's a great test.
Oh yeah, I'm interested in Giles.
And Giles at 170 too.
Yeah, he looked very good. He looked like he should always win at 170. Did he? Do you know the backstory? Did he take some time off of being a police officer? Do you know, or did he just do it? I forgot
he was going to 170 until like 2 days ago when I saw it was a welterweight fight. And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. So yeah. I actually don't even know really the whole story behind it. Simon Oliveira, Tony Gravely is just going to be fun. Just trust me on that. I'm not going to get into it so we can go to the peeps. But also Kay Hansen just coming back after everything she's gone through. And she's got a really good test. Jazz DeVizius is game. And she's like a natural in the sport. And she found it kind of late in her life. But someone that if she found MMA at like 20, 21 years old, would be really interesting to see what her career would look like. So she finally makes her UFC debut. That should be a lot of fun. So let's go to the peeps. Let's try to get a few. Let's get a few questions in because those two title fights rule and we gave them the time they deserved, I think. Yeah. We did it right.
I got to go get ready for ceremonial weigh-ins too.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah,
so let's do this really quick.
All right, real quick. Ooh, that's too small.
Joseph Boza, how insane is that the only ranked fighters fighting tomorrow are competing for belts? Is that true? I mean, the MMA fighting rankings, perhaps. Is Stamen ranked?
Stamen's in the UFC rankings? Right?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. He's coming off a loss, right? Yeah.
Coming off two losses.
Two losses,
but to
yeah.
Rivera and
one of them
Marab.
Was a featherweight, though.
But to another bantamweight, right?
Yeah, that was back when featherweights were fighting up.
Yeah.
Nope, he's not ranked.
Yeah, yep. I can't do this subject again. This kind of goes back to the quality of the card.
It's also
really what you want when you're debuting this $75 price tag. It's all
Also, a lot of fights have like fallen out of this card. So this isn't even the original plan. Like, let's not forget we had like Alexei Oleinik, Greg Hardy, Sergey Spivak. Like those fights all fell.
Cannonier Brunson.
Cannonier Brunson got moved. So.
Maybe. Alexa Grasso, Araujo was supposed to be on this card.
It's bad luck. Like, it's not what you want for the $75, but I know a lot of people like to throw mud at the UFC, but sometimes it's just not their fault that things fall apart. Like, COVID happens too.
All right. Yep. This one's for Mike. I don't know the answer to this.
Best contender series fighter. Boy, this is a good question.
There's a lot of contender series debuts. Right?
I mean, it's half the freaking card. Yeah. I mean, Michael Morales is pretty solid. This guy's real good. Very high ceiling. Is a savage. I mean, Simon Oliveira is good. Is very. I mean, there's a ton of them. There's a ton of them. Jazz DeVizius is good. Some of the Mexican fighters on this card, obviously they're building up that market as they should on this card, and obviously Della Maddalena is super solid too. So there's some good ones. I mean, you can't really go wrong with any of the contender series fighters, but I think Della Maddalena will probably have the showcase performance because Pete Rodriguez is just a killer be killed kind of guy. He's only fought for like 4 minutes his entire pro career, and Maddalena is a very technical striker, a guy that lost his first two fights and then has gone on to win 10 in a row after fixing some of the issues that he had. So yeah, I'd say Maddalena is probably the most talented contender series fighter competing on this card. But Michael Morales is very good, very high ceiling.
All right.
Figgy's personalized walk-on music. Jose, I know he's trying to like do something with his phone and maybe try to play. Could you hear the personalized walk-on music at all?
I couldn't hear them talking in general. It was so loud in that venue. So he could have been saying, he could have been quoting Shakespeare. He could have been reciting Hamlet in Portuguese. I would have been like, yeah, I can't hear what you're saying, but you sound excited.
Probably would have been better if he was quoting Shakespeare, because some of that would be pretty rough. The long, like 30-second pause as he's waiting for the Wi-Fi to load and he's trying to pull up this song was painful, man.
It was that crowd reminded me of UFC 202 Fight Week when they did the Michael Bisping Dan Henderson press conference before the ceremonials, and no one cared about that, and they were just chanting Conor McGregor like while Michael Bisping was talking. Like Francis was talking, and you have every Mexican ever chanting for Brandon Moreno, And even Brandon Moreno, like, I'm sure they didn't show up, but he was like, shh, stop it. Like, stop it to, like, the crowd. And they did not. They were not listening.
What a guy. What a nice guy. What a great guy.
Brandon Moreno has to win tomorrow night because when Figgy was doing that, Brandon Moreno was telling Dana, get him the Wi-Fi code. He was like, he needs the Wi-Fi password.
The interactions between these two is, like, low-key kind of, like, hilarious
to me.
It was.
Brandon Moreno is not here for it. No.
Sorry?
They don't even hate each other. Like, Davidson and Brandon Moreno, they respect
Brandon
each other.
Brandon's just, like, pointing out the absurdity of all of this constantly. Yeah. I'm just like, dude, what are you doing, man? Yeah. Like, this isn't working.
Like, look, why are you trying so hard?
Yeah, we're trying so hard. Let me see. All right.
And then when Ngannou and Gon would have conversations, it was like they were having tea at the local coffee house where they're just sitting there
having in-depth, specific
conversations about things.
I wish they would have argued with each other in French because Cyril, obviously, it's not his first language, and Francis knows a lot more English than Cyril, and they're, like, arguing in the language that neither of them is their first language.
This is true.
They should have just started arguing in French. It would have been way more heated.
Yeah, actually, everyone on stage is arguing in their second language or third language. Yeah.
I almost feel bad for Cyril Gane at certain points in that because it almost seemed like he was, like, genuinely hurt by the idea that, like, dude, like, you don't even consider us teammates. Like, he seems so innocent. Like, come on, man. Like, very interesting.
We trained together. We weren't part of a team. It's like, but that's teammates. It's like, well, technically, but not. It was just, okay, I guess we'll have to disagree, but it was cute. Like, does anyone believe that?
Give the guy a hug. Like,
yeah. All right.
Are we good?
I got
one more. Honestly, we're kind of good. We're kind of good.
All right. We're good. Okay. Thank you, Title Fights, for giving us so much to talk about. Thank you very much for all of you listening or watching right now. If you're listening after the fact, thank you very much on the podcast network. Jose, tremendous work. Enjoy the ceremonial weigh-ins. We'll be watching on MMAfighting.com, of course. Casey, thank you for your help on the ones and twos. Sean, good talking to you again. I feel like it's been a minute since we've done this on a preview show setting. So tomorrow, People's Pre-Fight Show. I think we're going 45 minutes before the main card starts, which I don't even know if we know what time that is yet, but we will let you know. And get ready
for time for more cancellations, guys. Don't forget.
That's the attitude. I like it.
You can't be disappointed if you expect the worst.
So for Sean, Casey, Jose, Debbie Downer Youngs, I am Mike Heck. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Just leave the top two fights intact. Yeah. Rest in peace. Seriously.
Happy birthday, AK.
It's not my birthday.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.